Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot, we charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
Since 2013, Bombas has donated over 100 million socks, underwear, and T-shirts to those facing homelessness. If we counted those on air, this ad would last over 1,157 days. But if we counted the time it takes to make a donation possible, it would take just a few clicks. Because every time you make a purchase, Bombas donates an item to someone who needs it.
Go to bombas.com/ACAST and use code ACAST for 20% off your first purchase. That's bombas.com/ACAST, code ACAST.
You'll know real when you get it. It'll say eBay Authenticity Guarantee and you'll feel it. Maybe it's a head-turning handbag, a watch that says it all, jewelry that makes you look like the gem, sneakers and streetwear so fresh every step feels fly.
When it comes to style and luxury, eBay gets it. They're making sure the things that you love are checked by experts. Not just any experts, specialized experts. Real people who love this stuff with real hands-on authentication experience.
So when you see that shiny blue checkmark that says Authenticity Guarantee, shop with confidence. Every inch, stitch, sole, and logo is verified authentic through a detailed inspection. That's how you know that eBay's got your back.
Because when you finally step into those sneakers, put on that watch, get your real gold glow up, swing that handbag over your shoulder, or step out in that streetwear, you'll realize that feeling is unlike any other.
With eBay Authenticity Guarantee, you can trust that feeling of real is always in reach. Ensure your next purchase is the real deal. Visit ebay.com for terms. Well, hello, everyone. Welcome to Fat Mascara. I am Jen, and it's Thursday. It also happens to be Earth Day, so happy Earth Day. So before we get into the show, quick reminder, if you happen to listen to this episode right when it drops, good for you, because then there's still time to register for our Earth Day party tonight that is hosted by me, Jess, and hairstylist Natasha Speth, and Davinus, a brand that we love and have worked with for years. So go to fatmascara.com/Davinus if you want to attend. It's at 8 p.m. Eastern time today, Thursday, April 22nd. Again, that's fatmascara.com/Davinus, which is D-A-V-I-N-E-S. Okay, so on to the show. It's just me again, because if you were listening last episode, you know that last week I was sick. We were out. Jess and I weren't able to record. So we're replaying some of our favorite interviews. And the interview we have for you today, there's a special reason I picked this one. So it's Earth Day, right? And it's usually, and it is a time to celebrate the Earth. But of course, it comes along with a lot of like doubt about our future, sadness about the climate, wondering what we can do. And I just got finished reading the New York Times. They did this big explainer on climate change called The Science of Climate Change Explained. Great, great title there. Good SEO, huh? Facts, evidence, and proof. And I was getting a little bit of depressed by some of the facts. But then I started thinking the most amazing thing about this is, of course, the science. You guys know me. Because yes, it also shows us there's problems in the earth, but it can also show us some ways to fix things. And I thought, who better than one of our favorite interviewers, Michelle Wong, the Lab Muffin, to be here with us on Earth Day. She's a science educator and she has a chemistry degree, and she takes a skeptic's look at the beauty industry, but she also takes an educator's look. She's really good at explaining the way beauty products work, the way skincare works, and just making sure you understand what you're buying, what you're getting, and how marketing works as well. So I love this interview. It's one of my favorites. Of course, I got to pick this one. Thanks, Jess. So go ahead and give it a listen, and then we will be back to our regularly scheduled programming next week. And if I don't see you at the party tonight, maybe we'll try and have another party, but I hope I do see you there. Michelle Wong, I can call you Michelle Wong. I don't have to call you Lab Muffin, right?
Oh, yeah, definitely. Yeah.
So we're here with Michelle. Thank you so much for joining us from, halfway around the world. Where are you in Australia?
I'm in Sydney. So I have so many questions, as do our listeners. But first up, I want to know what your background is, because when I read some of your blog posts, I know you're a scientist, but then you seem like a therapist, a psychologist, a sociologist. So what did you study, and how did you get into this business?
So I did a PhD in chemistry. I graduated in 2013, actually, which is so long ago. So my PhD was in medicinal and supramolecular chemistry. So medicinal, like making drugs and seeing how they work on the human body. And supramolecular, that one's a bit weird. It's like how chemicals interact with each other. So how like chemicals interact with like tiny receptors in your body and that sort of thing. So I started my blog in 2011 when I was in the middle of my PhD, and during my PhD I got into beauty rather. I was already deep in chemistry.
Yeah.
Yeah, so I got into the beauty world. I started looking up products, and I realized that there was a lot of misinformation out there. So I would look up how a product worked, and it would just be a really complex explanation. And it would be just wrong. And it was like, how is anyone meant to navigate this? So I started writing my own explanations and trying to explain how I understood it. And yeah, that's how I got into it.
I mean, skincare is confusing. Yeah.
It's really confusing. And, you know, we usually hear one person or a media outlet explain, you know, how a product works, but then the next magazine or the next blogger, you know, or the next company who says, you know, they're the product founder or they're the, you know, the brains behind it will say another thing. So how do we know who to trust? And I have got to put my hand up and say, we often have people one week say, you know, this product is good for you or this ingredient's amazing. And then the next week, you know, we'll have somebody say like essential oils are bad. Like this happens all the time. Who can we trust?
That's a really hard question. I think it's really difficult to work out what is actually going on. So I think it's
I've set you up kind of unfairly because I can't answer that question, you know, with a really declarative authoritative answer, because I think everyone kind of has their own perspective and philosophy, right? I mean, what are your thoughts on that?
I think the only real answer is like developing critical thinking skills, like seeing information, gathering more information, and then seeing how well that fits with the rest of the information. So I think there is like one maybe shortcut. I think part of it is just looking at people's qualifications and seeing where the weight of the information is. So I guess if you see like 15 dermatologists saying one thing and then two saying the other thing, then you go with the one that the first lot said. But beyond that, it's really hard because you have even doctors out there saying completely wrong things. Yeah, it's a minefield.
So this is not really like a black or white issue. This is something that you have to kind of take the information that you've seen and sort of make your own decision.
Yeah, I think it is. There is a lot of like trying to work out which sources are good and reliable and which ones aren't. And it's difficult. It's very difficult.
What do you look for when you're looking at a skincare product? Like what type of information do you want the company to provide? What do you look for when you're looking at a skincare label? What is your sort of, you know, tried and tested lab muffin process? Take us through it.
So when I look at a skincare product, what I really want to see is active ingredients that can actually potentially do what the product's claiming to do. So just that possibility, because sometimes that isn't even there. I also look for positive reviews from people who have similar skin to me. If a product has unusual claims, I like to ask for information about that. And I think I'm like quite privileged in that sense because a lot of companies are willing to give me that information as long as I sign an NDA. But yeah, I think if there is an unusual claim, you kind of want that company to go out of their way and try to give you that information because, I mean, they have a monopoly on that claim pretty much. Mm-hmm. So they should be really happy to try to prove it to you, I think.
What's an example of an unusual claim?
So there's a sunscreen brand called Evie. I think it's pronounced Evie. I don't know. They're Swedish. And one of their claims is that if you put on the sunscreen, you can let it sink in, take a shower, and you'll still have protection, which is really weird because most sunscreens, like, you wash it off and it's gone. So I actually did ask them for the information on that, and they showed me some data, which was they did actually get people to put it on, wash it off, and then tested the SPF afterwards. And that's not a claim that's really captured by current regulations, so I was really impressed that they actually had that data.
What is your, you know, I have to ask you, it's 2020. It seems like everyone's claiming to be clean, green, organic, what, you know, whatever the buzzword is this week. What is your take on that movement?
I think it's misleading. I think it sort of, it comes from a good place. So it sort of takes our good intentions. Like, we all want to use things that are good for us, that are good for the environment. But
totally
then,
agree.
Yeah, it takes that and then it interprets it in a overly simplistic way. So theoretically, you could do that by looking at the ingredients on the product and saying it doesn't have these things, therefore it's clean. And unfortunately, that's just not how reality works. So I think it's like a very tempting sort of simplistic way of looking at it. But yeah, I think it's just, it just becomes a marketing technique.
Do you think we just like don't have the right word for it yet? You know, like, I feel like I always have a little giggle whenever we talk about clean, but do we just not have like the right word? Like, the word clean just sounds like so simplistic. Do we, is it just a language thing, or do brands just not know? Is it like a naivete with brands? Like, they think, okay, if we just don't use certain ingredients, then it must be clean. Like, why are we still banging our heads against the wall with this topic?
I think it's a mixture of those things that you just said. So I think there are some brands who do genuinely think this is how it works. But I think there are some brands who really should know better. Like, they have scientists on their team. One of the organizations that really pushes the idea of clean, the Environmental Working Group, they've been around for long enough that they must have come across the basics of toxicology. Like, the amount makes a huge difference to how your body will interact with it and stuff like that.
Right.
So, yeah, I feel like some of it is just intentional at this point. It has to be.
Intentional deception?
I feel like it has to be. Like, it's, they've been around for 15 years. Surely they've heard of, like, the dose makes the poison.
Caroline Hirons talked about that a lot when we did a, well, we've had a podcast with her, but we did a live with her. I know she's quite passionate about that topic. she's fantastic. We're huge, tremendous fans of her here at the pod. So are there any ingredients, talking about, you know, no-no ingredients, clean or not, whatever, are there any ingredients that are just non-starters for you? Like, if you see this ingredient, you just will not use that product.
There are a couple. So MI and MCI, these are two preservatives. And it's just because I'm allergic to them. I think there are, like, people who aren't, and that's fine. It's just me. Sometimes I actually forget to check for them, and then I, like, react and I'm like, oh, that's not good. And then I'm like, oh, that explains why. But yeah, other than that, I think I'm pretty much willing to try whatever.
Cool.
So that even if you were making a product yourself, you wouldn't leave off like a paraben or a particular, whatever it might be. There's no like no list for Lab Muffin.
Not really, unless it's like flat out illegal. Probably not.
Right, right. How did you find out that you were allergic to those two ingredients? Did you get a test?
I actually haven't been tested. I should probably do that. I just put off a whole bunch of things I should ask my doctor, which is awful. But I just used a whole bunch of shampoos and then I noticed that there was this consistent pattern in the shampoos that I use, which have that.
Got it. Okay. She was applying the scientific method, guys. Hear that? It wasn't just like she thought she might be. Okay, so a lot has been changing. The clean movement's gotten bigger. In the last month or so, though, the beauty industry has had a reckoning. And so we wanted to talk to you about that. clearly this was in the wake of George Floyd's murder and all of the protests and the reckoning that has been long overdue, in our opinion, as far as racism in the industry. I want to know, like, have you noticed any changes yet with regards to that topic?
In the last couple months, in the last couple weeks, really, I've seen quite a few whitening products put out by the really big multinational brands announce changes in their messaging. So Fair and Lovely are changing to Glow and Lovely, which is nice. And of course, there's a lot of brands announcing that they'll be using more Black influencers, more people of color in their marketing. I don't know if it's hard to say whether it's just a token thing or not at this stage. So I think, maybe it's a wait and see sort of situation. I do think there are some parts that haven't really been called out, like mass media, for example, like a lot of those really big websites, Allure, that sort of thing. They've stayed kind of under the radar, I think, in terms of their representation. I feel like no one's really called out yet on their representation. And I think they really do.
I didn't want to exclude the beauty media. Of course, it's everybody. It's the formulators, the brands, the influencers, and of course the media and people like us too. You did mention the skin lightening products, and I loved your recent blog post about this. Can you tell us what you found though? You looked into the history of these products too. You weren't just talking about you were talking about the ingredients, but also the language. What did you find? Are they inherently racist and doing harm to people with darker skin tones, or are there good benefits and they just have like a bad name? Where did you sort of land on that?
I think a large part of it is the products themselves have benefits, but a lot of the marketing around them, a lot of the language, and a lot of the, I guess, reasons people use them, that can be harmful if it is, like, focused on whitening, lightening skin tone, the fact that lighter skin tone is better, that sort of idea.
Are there still bleaching products? You know how, like, sometimes they're called bleaching products. Are these products that you're talking about like that? Or are these like things like, you know, niacinamide that might fade a dark spot, for example?
So there's a mix. A lot of the time, the actual bleaching products, those are dangerous and those include ingredients that either are prescription only or outright banned. So, for example, some of them have mercury-based ingredients. And a lot of the time, these are still illegal. They're sort of black market. They're in a lot of unregulated marketplaces. So, for example, in Africa, they tend to turn up a lot more. Other ingredients, hydroquinone. Hydroquinone is prescription only. And when it's used under the supervision of a dermatologist, it's perfectly fine. They limit how much you use, how often you use it, how long you use it for. But when it's in unregulated products, that's where it gets really nasty. People use them for way too long. People use them on way too much of their body in that attempt to get a lighter skin tone.
Dr. Sobel had recommended, frequent listeners of the show might remember a week or two ago, Dr. Howard Sobel recommended I forget the percentage, but it was a very
2%,
low percent.
2%.
Maybe it's 2% hydroquinone.
Which is over-the-counter in the United States.
Yeah, over-the-counter prescription cream that you can use on your body for discoloration. So that's not what we're talking about. Like, he wasn't like, put this on your face to lighten your face or anything. This was maybe this is different regulatory situation here in the U.S., but this was like we're talking about a different kind of situation here, right?
Yeah. So usually in the illegal products, it's much, much higher.
Okay. I don't want people to think that I'm pushing like a whitening cream here on fat mascara. Mm. Like, we're talking, when you're saying hydroquinone creams in other markets, it really is for whitening of the skin, because people have a different goal than just kind of brightening up a dark spot or something, right?
Yeah, so these creams, these ingredients, you can't really distinguish between lightening your overall skin tone and lightening a dark spot. Like, you can sort of try to select for it, but there's no hard line between this is a brightening cream and this is a skin tone lightening cream or anything like that. Pigment is pigment. Mm-hmm. So, yeah, like, it's in the way that it's used, in the way, in the instructions that the cream has, that's what makes the difference between whether something is dangerous and whether something helps people with hyperpigmentation, which tends to be people of color. So mm-hmm. I think there is a little bit of ignorance there as well. A lot of these ingredients, like, they sound scary if you use certain language around them, but in reality, they're ingredients that lots and lots of people with darker skin have to use if they want to even out their pigmentation.
Right, right.
Yeah, it's I'm so glad this happened, by the way, because this is like a perfect example of how in the nuance of the discussion, you hear one thing and it could be wrong in one case and right 2 weeks later in another case. Mm-hmm. And I do want to point out, it's a really good point about if you're putting on a cream to fade dark spots, it's not like you're going to get out a cotton swab and do it just on your dark spots. Mm. So the racism comes with the whole, like, my whole face was lightened, and the inherent, like, thinking that that's a better thing. And I think it's a lot of the marketing, too, where it's like, you don't want to do a disservice to a woman of color who wants to, like, get rid of one dark spot on her cheek and might need these ingredients.
Do you feel that the brands have pushed... Do you think that these brands, like, started the desire for the whitening product, like, and the desire for the lighter skin tones, or was it something that, you know, and I have to be really careful about how I say this, basically, like, did they feed into colorism, or did these brands create the colorism?
I think they fed into it. They perpetuate it, but I don't think they've created it.
I'm not saying that these brands are these brands are complicit. I want to be dead clear about that. But what I want to know is if, you know, did they, I think a lot of, you know, and we can talk about this with a lot of, like, you know, the brands, companies, capitalism have created a lot of problems and created a lot of unhealthy habits and values. And I'm curious if this is one of those cases. And if you don't want to comment on that, that's okay. You know,
I think a lot of the time, colorism has come about well before, like, mass marketing, and well before these brands existed, well before even these products existed. So, for example, in East Asia, a lot of it came from the fact that if you were richer, you didn't have to work in the fields, so you wouldn't get tanned. In India, it comes from the idea of caste. It comes from British colonialism, which mostly predates, like, where this whole mass beauty market is. So, yeah, I think it's more of a case of them perpetuating it to get more customers rather than them really creating a need out of nothing.
Understood. Thank you.
Hey there, it's Michelle Norris. I'm host of a podcast called Your Mama's Kitchen. When I travel, I'm usually looking for a way to find a taste of home when I'm not at home. And one of the things I love to do when I am at home is entertain. And Airbnb allows me to do that. When I was in California recently, I rented a house that had a great kitchen. And when we were sitting around the table, we're all thinking, we're in someone else's house. Someone could be in all of our homes as well. If you have a home, but you're not always at home, you have an Airbnb. Your home might be worth more than you think. Find out how much at airbnb.com/host.
Hey, Dave.
Yeah, Randy.
Since we founded Bombas, we've always said our socks, underwear, and T-shirts are super soft. Any new ideas?
Maybe sublimely soft.
Or disgustingly cozy.
Wait, what?
I got it. Bombas. Absurdly comfortable essentials for yourself
and for those facing homelessness,
because one purchased equals one donated.
Wow, did we just write an ad?
Yes.
Bombas, big comfort for everyone. Go to bombas.com/ACAST and use code ACAST for 20% off your first purchase.
You'll
know real when you get it. It'll say eBay Authenticity Guarantee and you'll feel it. Maybe it's a head-turning handbag, a watch that says it all, jewelry that makes you look like the gem, sneakers and streetwear so fresh every step feels fly.
When it comes to style and luxury, eBay gets it. They're making sure the things that you love are checked by experts. Not just any experts, specialized experts. Real people who love this stuff. With real hands-on authentication experience.
So when you see that shiny blue checkmark that says Authenticity Guarantee, shop with confidence. Every inch, stitch, sole, and logo is verified authentic through a detailed inspection. That's how you know that eBay's got your back.
Because when you finally step into those sneakers, put on that watch, get your real gold glow up, swing that handbag over your shoulder, or step out in that streetwear, you'll realize that feeling is unlike any other.
With eBay Authenticity Guarantee, you can trust that feeling of real is always in reach. Ensure your next purchase is the real deal. Visit ebay.com for terms.
You recently wrote about how confirmation bias affects how we decide to buy products and whether or not they work and if we should keep using them. Can you explain why that is? I think this is very interesting. I've heard of confirmation bias, but can you explain to our listeners a little bit more about what that means and how we should be aware of it?
So confirmation bias is pretty much humans just have a tendency to see what we want to see what we expect to see. We kind of ignore any information that isn't there. So, for example, if you think, Dove products always work for me, then every time you use a Dove product and it doesn't work, you kind of just conveniently forget that. And it's actually really hard to stop yourself from doing that because it's just part of who we are. We like patterns. We like spotting these patterns and like feeding, like we tend to select information that feeds into our personal narrative. So if you expect something to work, you will see it working. This happens more with some products as well. So, for example, if you buy an expensive product, there's something called post-purchase rationalization. You don't want to feel like you got duped. No one does. So you're more likely to see an expensive product working and ignore the fact that it might not be working as well. This also happens when you're looking for information. So if you Google, hydroquinone is dangerous. You are going to get search results that tell you hydroquinone is dangerous, and you will like smile and nod, and then you'll like scroll quickly past the ones where it says it's not. So I think it's just you have to try to catch yourself in these habits and think about what I'm expecting to see, and if I see that, maybe I should purposely search for information that is against my beliefs, and then try to make a more objective assessment of it.
Interesting. That I think that applies to so much of everything in life, really. And then what about user reviews? I think this really connects to everything what you're saying. I like to look for reviews that say, this is great, after I bought the product. Do they serve a purpose besides making me feel better?
I think they definitely have a purpose. Probably a bit more of a purpose before you actually buy the product and try it. I think, most products just aren't tested in proper scientific trials. Like the vast majority of them aren't. And so before you buy something, you do want to have an idea of whether or not it's likely to work. And you can't really tell that from just like, I guess, so-called scientific methods, like looking at the ingredients list. It's sort of like you look at a cake and it's got an ingredients list. All cakes have pretty much the same ingredients list, but not all of them are good. So yeah, I think it's really useful to have reviews. I think it is good to watch out for things like fake reviews. There's been a couple of scandals lately where certain companies have bought people to review their product on big sites.
Yeah.
Yeah, so I think it's good to be aware that that exists.
Do you have like a method for like, oh, that's a fake review? Like when you're looking at reviews as a scientist?
I guess I mostly
help
try
us
to
with
look
our critical
for
thinking skills.
I try to look for like really detailed reviews. And I try to look at like a lot of the time you can look at the user profile and see how many other reviews they've done. And so if they've done more reviews on lots of different brands, then they're a bit more trustworthy. Also, if it's like a blogger or someone, if it's someone who has done lots of reviews in the past and they have like a range of opinions, they don't just say everything is amazing, then I tend to trust that more as well.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. And then before we wrap up, what do you think, like, just as a general rule, what can we be doing to be better consumers? What should, you know, how can we better evaluate products as we look and buy them?
I think in general, people need to use less products. I think there is the big thing where in beauty, we tend to just hop on the train and get swept away and try to buy everything and then try everything. But I think it's good to remember that your skin, especially in skincare, makeup is a completely different story. Your skin has evolved over thousands of years, millions of years, to mm-hmm. look after itself. And so sometimes a lot of people are doing too much. And I've talked to a lot of dermatologists who are also a little bit worried about this. We tend to just try to do too much to our skin. And yeah, like, skin largely likes to be left alone. Of course, everyone has different levels of problematic skin, but a lot of the time I feel like we're bringing on these problems ourselves by trying too many things, using too many things at once, using too many irritating things as well, because we kind of tend to feel like irritating things are more powerful. Yeah, so I think maybe, like, pause your routine every once in a while and cut it back and see how your skin reacts to that. And maybe you don't need all of these expensive things.
I think that's probably a relief to some people listening to this.
But on that note, I still want to know what you use. I'm looking. There's products behind you on the shelf. So what are some of your everyday, like, go-tos for skincare?
I feel like a lot of the time I'm trying out products and I don't want to, like, endorse them yet because I haven't tried them out properly and I'm trying so many different things. And, like, I know that's exactly the opposite of what I just said, but, like, I'm a reviewer. I'm meant to review things. So I think the one product that has been in my routine for about 10 years is Paula's Choice 2% BHA Liquid. Amazing salicylic acid product. I have acne-prone, oily skin, so it's perfect for me. And I don't think it's really been beaten, which is amazing because it's been around for 10 years and it's still, like, I think the best salicylic acid product on the market that I've ever tried. Products that I really like at the moment, the Then I Met You Living Cleansing Balm. So this is Charlotte Cho's one. Oh, it's such a gorgeous product. It works really well, and it's like got enough of a smell that it feels like a luxury sort of experience, but it's also not enough that it irritates my skin, at least.
I like that balm. It's a good one. Okay, so before we let you go and start your day, since it's tomorrow there in Australia, we do this like 5 questions with all of our guests, a quickie round at the end of our interviews, just fun. Are you ready for it?
Yeah.
Okay. Don't be scared. So what was the first beauty product that you fell in love with?
Rosehip oil. Yeah.
Pure, not a brand, just like straight off the bush?
Honestly, I feel like they're all pretty similar. It's just any of the ones that are kind of orange and smell a little bit funky, they all tend to work pretty much the same on my skin. They make me glow. Love them.
Okay. So who's a celebrity you just know that you would be best friends with?
Oh, it's really hard. I've been watching RuPaul's Drag Race lately. So I think probably the drag queen Alaska. I feel like she's pretty good.
You guys would be buddies. Okay, so what's your favorite indulgent snack?
I'm pretty disgusting. So you know that garlic dip called Tomb? It's Lebanese, I think, and it's literally just they put garlic and oil into a blender and it turns into this, like, amazing frothy.
Sounds great.
Yeah, my breath smells awful for, like, 3 days afterwards, but I will eat that with a spoon.
That sounds real good.
Oh, my God, even better with some crusty bread. Okay, what's a song that pumps you up when you need energy?
I'm like a really timid driver. So when I drive, I listen to like really aggressive music to make myself drive like a normal person. So, I've been listening to, Wiley, who's like this British grime artist. I know he sings a lot about being awesome and that apparently makes me drive better. Yeah. So Pattern Up Properly by Wiley, really good banger.
That's really funny.
She's like, I'm going to make this left turn. Woo. Okay. So, What do you want to raise a wand to? That's what we do at the end of every podcast when we're excited about something, anything. So we raise a wand.
Nice linen sheets. I think it's because like I'm like in my 30s now. Nice. It's actually my birthday today. So
happy birthday.
Thank you.
Happy birthday.
I'm major.
I'm 33, so like I get really excited about sheets now. Nice set of linen sheets.
That's adulthood, right?
Yeah, it's nice. It's nice.
No, but for the summer, so good.
Yeah, I think like my whole life, I've always bought the cheapest sheets, and now I'm like, I'm an adult. I should
level up.
Allow myself. Yeah, exactly.
Level up. I love it.
You should. Okay, we're going to let you go because you don't want to be talking to us on your 33rd birthday. You should go celebrate. Have some of that garlic dip and enjoy your birthday.
Definitely. Thank you.
We hope you enjoyed the show.
It's your reviews and feedback that help us make the podcast even better. Head over to iTunes to rate and review us or email your thoughts to info@fatmascara.com.
We also want to answer your beauty questions and hear what products you love. To share a Raise a Wand product review or to ask a beauty question, email us at info@fatmascara.
If you send it as a voice memo file, we can even share your voice on the podcast. You can also do that by leaving us a voice message. Our phone number in the United States is 646-481-8182.
Thanks so much for listening.